It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer.
My name's Mike Brammer. Joining me tonight, Mike Coffey from NDNation.com, as Ed is out. Okay, Coffey, I think third time's a charm. About the last thing I'm going to not do is predict a close game for the final season. You pretty much nailed it. I mean, you said 40-7. Or no, you said 40.
I said 49-7. So
49-7, right. Close enough.
They missed two scores on me.
Yeah, but you get the defensive side of the ball right, which I thought was the more impressive thing, in all honesty. You know, other than, I mean, just first off, let's just start with Book. I mean, here he is another game in a row where he's pretty doggone solid and arguably had, at least that I saw, three drops that should have definitely been completions.
No, true. And one was for a touchdown. So I think so. Part of the early issue, the early offensive issues, part of it was probably, I mean, you got BC coming off a bye week, and as much as I said early in the season that I was so tired of people saying, oh, so many Notre Dame opponents have bye weeks, I think this late in the year, I can see that having an effect because, you know, we're in, what is this, week 11, week 12, or it's, people are more worn down. So I think a bye this late has advantages, I think, and I think that the Boston College decided they were going to be aggressive on defense because that was their only chance of slowing Notre Dame down offensively, and I think that worked early, but later as their defense wore down, I think they just didn't have enough in the tank to really do anything, because the deeper we got into the game, the easier it was to move the ball, and that's just a function of talent and conditioning. And yeah. I think Notre Dame had both.
Yeah, had both. You know, I think you're right about that in terms of later on in the season, mostly because you got game film of that team, more games that you're reviewing, which it's a little easier to make tendencies as opposed to early on in the season when you're trying to look at game film from the year before. So there's definitely that. The only thing that I guess was a little concerning maybe is, not that it mattered because we obviously moved the football, but you know, the run game isn't what you'd like it to be in terms of a dominating run game, and we just don't seem to be able to get that. We got some very good, hard, solid runners, Book being one of them, as he actually led the team in rushing yardage. But, you know, it doesn't seem like we've got that where it's third and two and it's an automatic first down for us because we're just going to run it down your throat. That isn't happening.
No, it's not.
However, having said that, the interesting thing is if Notre Dame scores 38 points against Stanford, they're going to set the single season record for points per game.
That's one of those stats where, like, you know, I mean, I don't not believe you. I'm sure you wouldn't say it if it wasn't true. But it's one of those I got to see proof of purchase kind of things here, because I mean, for an offense that is scoring so many points, it really can be excruciating to watch sometimes. It just from this, as you said, we don't have a standard running game when Ian Book is your lead running back. That's, I mean, honestly, I don't care how many yards we got. That's not good. I think we need the running back position to produce. Now, having said that, what is the second game in a row Braden Lindsey takes the ball round end and runs for more than 50 yards? I mean, I don't know what Chip Long is doing in the meetings this week, but it better be getting him more touches, because that kid has an explosive speed. He's just amazingly fast. They've got to try to get the ball in his hands as much as possible. So, not necessarily at the expense of like the Chase Claypools of the world and stuff like that, but there's got to be more balance, because a talented offense is going, or a talented defense, I mean, is going to cause this offense problems. If they know, okay, we really don't have to pay too much attention to the running backs, they're going to spy on Book, they're going to blanket cover the receivers and say, this formula is going to work because we can frustrate Notre Dame into not scoring, and as well as their defense is playing, keep them on the field for tons and tons of time and wear them out. I think that's what Michigan did. I think that's what, to an extent, Georgia did, and I'm nervous about a team more equipped than Stanford looking at this film and saying, ah, I know how to stop this, and then doing it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Stanford is, now granted, I'm not going to sit here and say that I think that there's going to be this awkward situation where they have the chance to beat us. I don't see that, but what I do see is a coaching staff that's totally capable of frustrating us for maybe the first quarter and a half. And the problem with that scenario is when you do it for a quarter and a half, you just cut the game down to X number of possessions, right? And then it becomes, okay, as long as Notre Dame doesn't self-inflict itself, it's going to win out over the course of the game, because as long as we're playing our game, the difference in what we've got in terms of capabilities and what Stanford has should equate to a win to us pretty easily, at least by two scores. I even think more than that. So, however, having said that, I do think that, you know, we just don't have we talked about this before. We don't have a guy like Dexter Williams who gets through the line of scrimmage and can create separation within like 6 yards. You know, he was the kind of back where you had a guy who was even with him, but all it took is two or three strides and Dexter was beyond the guy and there was no chance of him getting there. Lindsey's got that. He clearly has that kind of elite speed. There's no doubt about it. I just won, you know, I was thinking and watching him over the last two games, man, if there's any way possible to make that kid into a running back, that's a kid I'd like to have.
Well, the thing
there.
Is, next with Chris Tyree next year, I'm hoping we won't have to do that, and we can keep Lindsey out in the X slot or wherever it is that we have him. I apologize, I'm not really, I should be better on the depth chart than I am.
Yeah.
But I think you're absolutely right about Dexter Williams. He had the ability that if he made you miss, and he could very well make you miss, it was going to matter, because if he got a step on you and you had to correct, well, boom, he was gone. You just weren't going to catch him.
Right.
So I think missing that level of speed at the running back position this year is hurting us. I think next year with a Chris Tyree, I think that really, if we can get that back, maybe we'll see a more organized and quote-unquote traditional ground game and not be depending on the quarterback position all that much. But you know, I guess we're just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure there's just some argument there that the offensive line's a little thin at the moment, and therefore, you know, we're dealing with what we're dealing with. But you know, other than that, and that's really about the only thing you can say offensively is, you know, a little bit of a concern. The rest of the game is absolutely clicking, and it really all starts with Book, and he's been doing it. His confidence has taken another step up, it just seems like, over these last three games. And I kind of think that he's going to do the same out at Stanford. It may be a little bit of a wake-up call in that first quarter, but I kind of just don't see that lasting the entire game, and I just don't think Stanford's got the horses to complete the upset. And I think it's going to be a win for us.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but a couple of years ago, weren't there all these stories about how Stanford had like found the magic formula for training and strength and conditioning, and they were losing the least number of player minutes to injuries of, like, maybe not in college football history, but they were routinely top 10 in keeping their players healthy. And what's Stanford doing? People should do it like Stanford's doing. Well, I don't know whether, like, it was just a karmic thing, but it really seems to be hitting them this year. I mean, they're missing people all over the place.
Yeah.
And did their guy leave? Were they doing something hinky? I mean, I need to spend a little time this holiday week kind of taking a gander at that and see what kind of changes there have been on the farm, because there's definitely a lot more people limping around than there used to be.
Yeah, I mean, they've been decimated this year. There's no doubt about it. And I think that comparison they were making to us was Stanford. How come we got so many guys that when we went through that 2 years ago? you looked at Stanford and they almost had nobody, and everybody wanted to look at that as the difference maker. But I don't know that
Well,
there's anything to that.
it's certainly a testament to how strength and conditioning has improved, in that we're not, the last couple of years, we haven't been seeing the November swoons that we did previously. And I think the strength and conditioning coaches that were brought in a couple of years ago really have made a difference in endurance. I mean, you watch how the team played against Boston College this past week. I mean, the defense was hitting, the offense was, they were getting to their spots and all that. So there doesn't seem to be as much of a physical wear down as we've seen. And that certainly, I mean, whatever they've done to improve strength and conditioning after 2016, it's definitely working. And it's really the kind of thing that you probably need more than a year to see, because people building up their endurance and building up their strength and building up their muscle and just doing it smart instead of just working hard at it. I think we're seeing those results now, and I'm hoping that the foundation they've laid can continue no matter who necessarily the strength. I mean, not that there'd be any danger of a coach leaving, but you know, I don't want it to be just a flash in the pan. This is something that they've definitely improved, and I want them to keep it up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, it's easy for us to sit here and say that everything's improved, right? I mean, that's definitely been one area where you can absolutely see it. But, you know, I think just the in-game adjustments that we make, you know, you made the comment about Boston College coming out and having 2 weeks to prepare, 2 weeks of film, 2 weeks of all that. Obviously, they were well prepared because they did it at that, you know, they did it at that mark where into that second quarter, we were kind of struggling. I mean, it didn't seem like we could get anything going. But then, lo and behold, Chip Long makes some adjustments, and all of a sudden, we start to create some separation. And then, once we got that 2-score lead, you know, really put Boston College in a bind, being as one-dimensional as they were. You know, there just wasn't going to be a lot of opportunity, and that allowed us to just kind of close in the ranks and defend against that run,
No,
and they
absolutely.
couldn't almost do anything. And I kind of think the same thing's going to happen against Stanford. I mean, I think we're going to eventually figure out the little wrinkles that they throw early on, because they're a good enough coaching staff to come up with some stuff. But I think ultimately, at the end of the day, they're not going to be able to, with the coaching that we've got and the abilities we've got to make those in-game adjustments. I just don't see how, unless we self-inflict ourselves with errors left and right, I don't see how we don't end up winning this football game.
No, I think, well, as I heard on another podcast recently, if Brian Kelly's ever going to win out in Palo Alto, it's definitely going to be this year, because if he can't beat a Stanford team this beaten up with nothing to play for and all that, I mean, he's never going to do it. So I agree with you. I'm comfortable in saying whatever wrinkles or issues that Stanford can throw at us, by the time halftime rolls around, we'll probably have figured them out. And the second half, I think, is going to be, you're going to see a Cardinal team just looking at their watches saying, when is this season over? We need to huddle back up and go back to the drawing board.
Yeah. And with Notre Dame, there's a lot there to play for. I mean, it looks pretty obvious that it's going to be Orlando, at least, you know, probably 70% better chance than that.
Yeah.
So, not that that'll be a bad thing for us. I mean, I kind of think playing in Oklahoma State is going to be better than going to the Cotton Bowl and playing, you know, some lesser Power Five opponent that
Well,
just doesn't
the
do us a lot of
downside
good.
of playing a Group of Five team is that it doesn't get you anything. If you win, well, duh, you were supposed to. But if you lose, all of a sudden, you say, oh, look, Notre Dame can't even beat those teams. So I would rather play a team from a Power Five conference instead of one of those Group of Five guys. Now, if you can match us up with a Power Five team in as meaningful a bowl as possible, okay, great. I'm all for that. I mean, if they could figure out a way for Notre Dame to go to the Orange Bowl, that would be good, because at least you're playing an ACC team. You're playing a team that recruits at a meaningful level. Now, based on the fact that it'll probably be either Virginia Tech or Virginia in the Orange Bowl, it's highly unlikely that Notre Dame would get chosen because they don't want a rematch. But I think that's really emblematic of how really convoluted and stupid these bowl contracts have gotten. I understand the bowls want, well, we want to make sure we get a team every year. The problem is they're getting the same teams every year, or they're getting teams that are just completely meaningless to people actually going to the game. Now, I realize with all the video and all the TV rights and the broadcast stuff that they don't necessarily care who's in the stands, but it looks really bad when you're panning around the Orange Bowl and half the seats are empty. I mean, it just looks ridiculous. Now, they'll probably get Florida as the opponent, which would get a lot of people to go. Okay, fine, that works. But I can't help but think that bowls like the Sugar Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl, who are just locked into teams every year, and why I can't understand why they don't say, we need more flexibility than this. We need to create interesting matchups every year, and maybe next time the contracts come around, it's going to be more flexible, where they're going to say, okay, well, we're going to take the Big 12, we're going to take the highest ranked of the Big 12 champ, the SEC champ, and Notre Dame. Whoever's ranked the highest over there, we get to pick them. And then it's like, yeah, maybe the conferences push back, but I think the bowls, especially the ones outside the playoffs, I mean, they're kind of on borrowed time. I mean, how many players are going to skip playing in these meaningful bowls because they don't want to destroy their they don't want to have what happened to Jalen Smith happen to them?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's too many cooks in the kitchen. You just you can't. They're trying to make everybody happy, and by trying to make everybody happy, it ends up making the overall product worse. And so, you got a slate of bowl games that just aren't going to carry a heck of a lot of interest. And so, I think, you know, especially now with the way that the days line up and where the bowls line up, you don't necessarily have that, you know, January 1st football day where you can flip on the TV at noon and it's rock solid until 11 o'clock at night. So, I mean, I think this is a bit of a problem, but there's all kinds of things that they're up against that are going to cause all kinds of problems, I think. To the point where I think we're going to see either an 18 playoff fairly soon, or the NCCA is going to go away. There's going to be some other league that's
going to
go away.
No, you're right. I can see them saying, okay, we're going to go to an 18 playoff, and it's going to be like at the location of the bowls. The trouble is, if you're the team that wins the three games, by the time you get to the championship game, isn't your fan base pretty much traveled out? I mean, it's hard enough to travel to one bowl game. I mean, going to two is a challenge. I mean, what happens when it's an 18 playoff and your team wins three games? That's or wins the two games and goes to the championship. I mean, I would love to have enough money to be able to travel like that, but I don't, and I don't think a lot of people do. So it's going to be. I think if it does go to an 18 playoff, I think you're going to see at the very least the first round is still going to be on campuses because. They want to minimize the travel costs, and especially for teams like the Ohio States and the Nebraska is just to use an example of state teams that draw well and can draw well on short notice. Now, might Notre Dame playing a home game there, that might be tough because, I mean, think of how many people travel from all over the country to go to a Notre Dame game, but you've got to plan that stuff in advance. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah. Definitely interesting. All right, let's shoot for it. I'm going to say 40-17 Irish roll Saturday. What do you think?
I'm going to go with my same 49-7 from last week. I think it worked well last week. It's going to work well again this week.
Yeah, as long as we get the W, I'm okay. But I do think it's going to be 2-3 score win. I think they're two programs are headed in two different directions, and we're playing too well right now.
No, I agree.
So let's hope for the best. All right, good deal. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.